What's up, college baseball fans? Episode 58 of the 11.7 podcast brought to you by College Baseball Hub. The season is officially over, and we are going to recap the College World Series right after this. Stay with us.
College baseball fans, Ben and I are back. We are here to break down the conclusion of the 2019 College World Series. Ben, what a grind it's been. We've been here since early February. It is now late June. We've been through the ups, through the downs of our first season, been there for the fans 3 days a week, and it all culminated tonight with Vanderbilt taking down Michigan with a final score of 8-2, and we are going to break it all down and what this means going forward for our great game of college baseball. Ben, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and I'm doing a lot better knowing that there was over 330,000 attendees for this year's College World Series, which I believe is a new record, and all three championship games had over 20,000 people. So there was like a 24,000, a 25,000, and a 20,000, which is really good for the sport. It's something that we're moving in a positive direction, and I still remember 2 years ago when Coastal Carolina won it. I think there was maybe two or 3,000 people in the stands because
it was a day game and a rain delay.
Yeah, it was a rain delay day game, which was totally bizarre because you wouldn't see that in any other, college football championship or college basketball championship. But it was good. It was good to see the crowd. We got to see some celebrities in the stands. There was Juwan Howard, the new Michigan coach. I'm sure you guys are all tired of seeing his face on the television because it was on it. Probably for two full innings.
ESPN is all about that cross promotion. Here, look at this basketball coach. So you come back to our platform in 6 months and watch some more games. Like, unreal, man.
Yeah, but it was good to see. I thought, for the most part, that ESPN did a really good job presenting the whole thing. There was...
I'd give them a B minus.
I'll give them a B. And I was actually just about to give them a B. And this is why. I was really, really upset with the fact that Eduardo Perez went the whole season not announcing college baseball games and broadcasting, and then just throw him in the booth, and he messes up everybody's name. He only talks about catching fly balls with his mouth open, and there was just a bunch of just weird things going on. No chemistry. I think
that... You're right. They just threw him in there.
Because he's done it in the past.
There's got to be a bigger priority placed on the College World Series. Like, they're treating it like, oh, well, just throw them out there. I mean, what? It's a lower level. I mean,
it's the same thing they do with the Little League World Series. They basically just throw a bunch of information at a couple guys and say, like, here, these are the teams that are here. You do this every year. So learn about it and then just shoot your shot. Nobody's going to correct you.
Yeah, obviously the stakes aren't as high, and the Little League, like, you know what you're getting with the Little League World Series, right? You know what you're getting. Yeah. It's for the, you know, nostalgia and just innocence of the game and all that. But there was nearly, by the time the finals began, I know that the ratings for the games were nearly at 1 million per, and I would venture that they went over that for the finals. I'm looking for the ratings. I can't seem to find them.
I don't think they've released them yet, because I was looking for them too. But 1 million people watching. That's 1 in 300 people in America. That's a good amount of people. And yeah, it's not the 200 million that were watching the Super Bowl or the 100 million watching the FBS championship. But the 1 million people, that's a good sign for the game. And that's what I wanted to talk about a little bit, was the growth of the game and how I think it's going in that direction. But
we should probably touch on the game three highlights, since that is how the season culminated. But I personally, man, just kind of a quick hitting thought. Michigan gave Vanderbilt everything that they had. At the end of the day, I think Vanderbilt's just depth. I mean, we talked about before the show. Best team and the best conference from day one, right? Like, you could argue here or there, UCLA 1, Vandy 2. Like, it's mostly semantics. Best team, best conference, day one. and Michigan was gave them everything they had, and they just came up one game short, man. Some breaks here or there, and I really think they could have won.
Going into this NCAA tournament, Vanderbilt was sitting at 2.5 to 1 odds to win the whole thing, clearly making them the best team. Michigan sitting at 200 to 1 odds
really
to win it all. And to put that in perspective, I think Michigan had about the same odds as, I looked this up, as Nevada winning the college football national championship.
Oh,
or something
God.
Like that. It was bizarre. And so nobody gave Michigan a chance. They almost didn't even make it in the tournament. They were the final four in. Some argue that the last team that was put in. And they made some noise. And when I say some noise, like, they made a lot of noise. Their players are recognizable. They are going to be treated like celebrities, kind of like their football team and basketball team are. And it's a step in the right direction for the northern schools. You can say whatever you want, but now it just gives an opportunity for kids from up north to maybe stay up north. It allows the coaches from up north to recruit all over the nation. And it's just kind of a slap in the face to the Big Ten Conference for not allowing, you know, that vote to pass through for the third paid assistant coach. Because, hey, you guys have a team in the national championship game up 1-0 and 1 win away from winning a national championship. Like, how dumb do you feel? But the Michigan train ended today with an 8-2 beatdown from Vanderbilt. And it was mostly just...
They had it, man.
They had it. And I don't even know how to explain it because they let off the game with 3 straight singles, all mashed line drives. And I'm thinking, uh-oh, Michigan's about to win this game 10-2.
Yeah.
10-0. Like, they're not going to be stopped. And then, strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. Homer in the second inning for Vanderbilt. And then one missed call or, flip a coin, 50-50. Borderline pitch to walk in a run. And then the wheels just fell off.
Yeah, a borderline pitch. Excuse me. A borderline pitch from Carl Kaufman. Could have been a punch out to get out of the inning. Walks and run. Vanderbilt takes the lead. And then Steven Scott hits a 2-run single. Tacks on more. 4-1 heading into the top of the fourth. Like, you definitely just took a punch to the face. You could call it even a knockdown, considering the depth of Vanderbilt's arms that you have to deal with. And honestly, man, a couple of bad breaks. Like, so there's that missed called strike. I mean, I've seen way worse pitches been called strikes all tournament long. I expected it to be called a strike. And part of the reason I expected it to be called a strike, something I've mentioned before on the show, is it was a ball that's actually over the plate, right?
Like, right.
It's actually over the plate, and it probably crossed the plate at the knees. Like, that's definitely – like, we've seen balls
– seen plenty of balls in this tournament alone.
We've seen plenty of balls 5 inches off the plate below the knees called strikes. So that's a bad break. And
I hate to be this guy.
The guy, bro.
But Perry Costello is just one of the most inconsistent umpires this game has ever seen. Mm-hmm. And he's got a lot of ego to him, similar to like Angel Hernandez or Cowboy Joe West of the MLB.
He tries to
make the show about him, and he always has these big emotional actions and
theatrical.
It's very theatrical, and I just get sick and tired of it because it's like, dude, if you're gonna call a pitch 4 inches off the plate a strike, and then call a pitch maybe an inch low a ball, it's like, dude, there's a plate there for a reason. Don't call either of them a strike, or call both of them a strike. But I always do this. I always say I'm not going to make it about the umpires, but it was just a very big question mark even going into this game why Perry Costello was put in this position to be the home plate umpire. It's not just us that know about him. It's people from all over college baseball. You just Twitter search his name and millions of articles will pop up. He is a guy that you don't want to see behind home plate controlling the game, controlling the pace of play at all in this stage.
No, 100%. And I guess to try to play devil's advocate is Vanderbilt had the same strike zone, like 100%. Like, you know, it's not like Perry Costello was like, all right, I'm going to go take a break whenever Vanderbilt's pitching. Like, no, he called the game for both teams, obviously, as per how baseball works. But definitely a bad break for Michigan. And then what I really threw my hands up in the air is Michigan has a chance to respond. They get the bases loaded with two outs, and they line out to left field. Like, that, like, it's just bad luck. That ball, if that's not hit at the outfielder, it probably clears the bases, and we've got a whole different game. Like, you just need breaks to go your way. They didn't get any. That's point one. And then something you brought up before the show, Michigan punched out in 33% of their plate appearances against Vanderbilt in this series. Effectively, you're trying to beat Vanderbilt when you give yourself six innings worth of outs to work with per game. It's just, it ain't going to happen.
Right. And let us be clear, like, neither one of us cared who won this game. We both wanted to see just a really entertaining game, a fun game three, something where it comes down similar to what Coastal Carolina came into with a winning run on second base, and they have to punch out somebody to win the game.
That's what
I wanted to see today. I didn't care if Vanderbilt won. I didn't care if Michigan won. I thought either one would be good stories, but it was just, I don't know. There was just a factor of Michigan was getting unlucky. It felt like every hard hit ball they hit, you know, found a glove. And then there were some soft hit balls for Vanderbilt that squeaked up the middle that scored a run or two every time. So the 8-2 game, I felt like it was closer than that. It's two swings away from being a 5-3 game going into the ninth. And then you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
So,
I'm going to be honest. I was 100% rooting for Michigan to win. There's a story that really just got me with, God dang it. The catcher, Joe
Donovan.
Connor. Joe
no,
Donovan.
Donovan, one of my favorite players now. Love that.
Yeah. God, his story is just unreal. Like, I was rooting for
him and Tyler Brown from Vanderbilt.
Yes. You can look those up yourselves. But I was rooting for Michigan not only after that, learning about him and his story, but I want the game to grow. And I think one of the best ways for that to happen would be another surprising team to win the national championship, because people throughout history, they remember the winners, man. People remember the winners. And if Michigan, what a cool story. They made it to the finals. We're one win away. Like, yeah, that'll grow the game for Northern schools and for Michigan in particular, but nothing will grow the game for them and for Northern schools as much as winning the whole thing.
Well, and so, I was actually thinking about this. There was not a better team to put on a pedestal for the Northern schools like the Michigan Wolverines, because they're not dealing with any disadvantages. Like,
right.
Sure, the weather's colder, but they are, like, almost, I would say 99% of people in the United States know about Michigan, like the Wolverines.
100%.
They're iconic. They've had a huge history, not only in football and basketball, but they win, like, indoor track. They've won two national championships in baseball. Like, this would have been the perfect, like, eye-opening experience for non-college baseball fans to say, hey, you know what? Like, Michigan won. Like, that's pretty cool. We thought it was only Southern teams that win.
Right.
But if you opposed to, like, maybe if Illinois or Indiana would have been in this position, people would be like, oh, man, college baseball is not that competitive. Anybody can win. That's, like, this is a weird sport.
Yeah.
So no offense to Illinois and Indiana. Like, they both have everything going in the right direction, and they could have easily been in this position that Michigan was.
Michigan's got a little more a curb appeal factor.
Right, exactly. I mean, the owner of Barstool Sports, Dave Portnoy, is, like, live tweeting the game because he went to Michigan and, you know, he's diehard Michigan this and that. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't see that if it was, you know, I don't know, Minnesota, who hosted a regional 2 years ago. Like, mm-hmm. Minnesota's in it, it's like, I don't really care. Like, this just shows that college baseball is a weird sport. But, yeah.
So let me ask you this. The series is over. The tournament is concluded.
What is that, five-week tournament, four-week tournament?
Just not, about.
I mean, if you take – I think conference tournament started the 21st, May 21st.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a month ago.
Wow, it's over a month ago.
A month and 5 days ago. That dude, I love college baseball for that reason.
The postseason is awesome. I mean, I know it won't ever be something like the way March Madness is, but there is so much potential in this sport and in this industry. There's such low-hanging fruit. There is hardly any marketing done there for these teams, for these players. It's a lot of opportunities, and like I said, the product of this tournament is very, very good. I think, honestly, personally, I think the product of the conference tournaments, I'm too much of a diehard. The super regionals and the regionals, that product is really good television, because what you have for average fans is, oh, look at this great game, and then ESPN brings you another great game. It like builds on itself, all this excitement. So,
no, I mean, I agree. The tournament as a whole this year was very exciting. I mean, we saw Bryce Blom hit a walk-off grand slam pretty much upset West Virginia.
Yeah.
Kumar Rocker's no-hitter, 19 strikeout performance. There was just tons and tons. And James and I plan on doing a show that kind of recaps the whole season. Obviously, they're going to leave out a lot of details, and there's only going to be certain things hit on. But
kind of like an epilogue.
Yeah, it's an epilogue. Basically, hitting the key points throughout the whole season. We've been asked by multiple fans, like, will you guys recap the season for us? You know, give us something to look forward to for next year. And something else that we plan on doing is probably once a week have like one podcast. So instead of three a week, we'll have one, and that one will be it will have a good interview. Like, we'll have a guest interview. We're working on some getting lined up, but now that the season's over, we'll get more contact with players and coaches, listen to what their future plans are and that kind of thing. So
college baseball, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, college baseball season does not end. This is just chapter one of the 11.7 book. And it's going to keep rolling until we run out of paper. So, yeah. But let's talk a little bit about this. Let's talk a little bit about this three-game series. Everybody knows the story about how Michigan came out game one, guns a-blazing. They went 7-4. It felt like everything was going right for Michigan. They were the hot team. Tommy Henry was unhittable in the postseason. And I don't know, like, Vanderbilt kind of made it a closer game towards the end. We had J.J. Bleda hit a home run in, like, the seventh inning. And something about that kind of made me mad. And can you guess what it was?
I can't, honestly. What made you mad?
It was, like, J.J. Bleda's 27th home run was not anything, like, spectacular to the reporter just interviewing a couple fans on the side. Like, it was... The camera was on her.
Oh, come on. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, she was interviewing, who was it at the time? Was it
Juwan Howard?
Juwan Howard, I know, but it was kind of a big moment.
It was
Imagine if somebody, you know, did a windmill dunk. Like Zion does a windmill dunk while they're interviewing another coach. They would have cut everything into that and put it on, I don't know.
No, that is true. No, you're not. What it is, it's poor planning on the production staff. Like, they should know ahead of time, like, hey, what if we're doing an interview and something really, really cool happens? Are we going to cut? And they clearly didn't plan it. It's her job to do the interview. So not to mention
that Kyle Peterson and Eduardo Perez aren't excited at all. They're already talking about tomorrow's game. Like, they're already saying, like, oh, this game's over. It's 7-3.
Game two.
Oh, well, they also did it game one.
Really?
Like, oh, and there goes J.J. Bleda's 27th home run. Wow, that kid's really good. Derek Jeter's really going to love him on the Marlins. And it's just like, maybe Vanderbilt will get him back tomorrow. And it's just like, dude, there's the seventh inning. The best hitter in college baseball we've seen in a long time just hit his 27th home run.
Yeah.
Like, let's have some excitement here. Meanwhile, Kyle Peterson's, like, mumbling around. I don't know, man. It was just a weird thing, game one. But
yeah,
Tommy Henry was a beast all tournament. Him and Kumar Rocker were just electric. I think they maybe gave up like two earned runs all tournament.
Yeah, Kumar Rocker, MVP, twice saving Vanderbilt, bringing them back from the brink of elimination. The season on his right arm against Duke and against Michigan in the finals, and the dude just came freaking through.
Yeah.
Like, what? Talk about things.
The whole country is watching. Like, every bit of pressure is on his back. He doesn't care.
Talk about good for the game. What that kid did was good for the game.
Oh, and we get two more years of him, James. Two Unreal. More years.
No, I'm glad I'm not a hitting coach or head coach in the SEC. I got to figure out how I'm going to deal with him Friday nights.
Oh, like, my gosh. He's good for the game because now the game of college baseball has a Zion Williamson, you know, face of the sport. Many would say that it was still a surprise to see what he did this postseason because before the postseason, I think he was 8-5. And, like, Vanderbilt was like, yeah, we throw him on Saturdays. He's really good. But, you know, has some command issues sometimes and leaves the ball over the middle of the plate a lot. But yeah. Finishes the year with 12-5 record. Very good. I know that doesn't mean much because, listen to this. I get sidetracked sometimes. Kumar Rocker actually had 5 of Vanderbilt's 12 losses this year. That's almost half of their, like, and he's looked at as, like, the saving grace of college baseball. It's like, you know, he struggled too his freshman year. He had to make some adjustments.
Oh, of course.
But
that's a good tidbit. That's kind of ironic based off all the praise he gets.
Right. That's sure. what I'm saying.
Good reporting on your part, man. Thanks. You should start a podcast.
But obviously wins and losses don't tell even half the story. He could have thrown complete game, one run games and lost 1-0. You never know. But
hey, but you know what? I'll defend you based off the love of those old statistics that primary original baseball media has. Like, you figured, like, they definitely think those have value. And
yeah.
So, I mean, because they've been around for, you know, the stats have been around for over 100 years. So
absolutely.
It's hard to forget about them. But he definitely saved their season again. I think it was nice to watch. Michigan definitely just they haven't seen these quality of arms. And it was the nail in the coffin, honestly.
Right. But we did have some questions answered that we've had for a long time. We have asked ourselves why Drake Fellows throws Friday nights for Vanderbilt for like the last 4 or 5 weeks. And he got really exposed in the College World Series, especially. In the postseason, especially. He had another good start. But, you know, Drake Fellows went 13-2 this year, but he didn't look half as good as Kumar Rocker. Another interesting thing is Tommy Henry got another life in life, if that makes sense. Because
Let me hear you.
He was one of the best pitchers that we've seen the first half of the season. I think he was like 5-0 with a 0.2 ERA. He gave up like 2 earned runs his first 6 starts. And then he just starts giving up barrels and barrels and barrels. And they demoted him to, I think, midweek or Sunday starters. And eventually got to a position where he was the best arm again. So I don't know if he was going through some dead arm or if he was having some mental issues, like maybe didn't trust his stuff. But the way he pitched, I could definitely see him in a big league uniform fairly soon.
Yeah, I really liked him. I thought Michigan.
Here's a good question for you.
Please.
This is just for you personally. Okay. If you could start, if you were the general manager of a new franchise.
Uh-oh.
You got to steal one of the players in this year's College World Series to start your franchise. Who are you taking?
To start my franchise, huh?
Like you got Austin Martin, who I think will be the number one overall pick next year from Vanderbilt. You got J.J. Bleday, who was the number 4 overall pick. You got Kumar Rocker, Reed Detmers. You have...
Oh, wait, are you saying from the whole College World Series tournament? From the Field of 8?
Yeah, from the Field of 8.
Oh, dude, wow.
I mean, I really liked Van Eyck. I like Drew Parrish. I like
Drew Mendoza.
Mendoza, Josh Young. You have
Tommy oodles. I mean, there's oodles and oodles of players.
I think I'm taking, since I put you on the spot, I think if I was a GM and got to pick one guy out of the World Series, it would be...
You got Alex Manelis, too.
I think I'm going to take Ethan Small.
Yeah, he's that's something special there. Like, that's a total unicorn. If I had to start my franchise, I think I'd probably take Austin Martin. I think there's a lot of... As crazy as it sounds, I think there's a lot of potential there. And I think he can play middle. I think he can play any 3 of the infield skill positions.
That's a good call. I like that pick.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, like, I love J.J. Bleday and all. I don't know. I just I think Austin Moore, I would put more emphasis on someone who might be able to play shortstop as opposed to someone who probably plays major league average at best left field.
Right.
You know, but I mean, you can't really go wrong. That's a great question. And the fact that we had to think about it so hard, like there's a lot of good talent at this World Series. There are as much as we talk about, obviously, the talent level. If you watch like Sunday Night Baseball with the Astros and the Cubs, like obviously that's different, but it's not like you don't get to notice anything. It's not like you're missing a whole lot. Like there's fun stuff to watch. Like these guys are special. And this year was the highest percentage of, I think they said the first two rounds, the highest percentage of the first two or three rounds of players that were drafted out of Division I colleges or universities.
Yeah, ever. That is a true fact. Yep.
So it's going to continue to go that way. So it's a really good time for college baseball. My question for you, now that we've kind of taken a little dive into the games, what do you think about Tim Corbin, man? Like, it looks like the rich are going to get richer with Vanderbilt bringing home their second national championship. Give me your thoughts about the future for Vanderbilt and kind of how it impacts college baseball.
I look at Tim Corbin as kind of like the Nick Saban of college baseball, because not only does he get the best recruits every single year, he convinces people to stay, he convinces people to come on campus, but if you look at his coaching staff and his coaching tree, it's right on track with Nick Saban. You have like Eric Backich, the head coach from Michigan that just finished runner-up this year, was basically the same. He was one of the guys that Tim Corbin leaned on to help build that Vanderbilt dynasty with the recruiting of David Price and Sonny Gray and those type of players. So the coaching tree that Tim Corbin has reminds me a lot of Nick Saban. The year-in, year-out success that his team has reminds me of Nick Saban. And I don't know, he just kind of has that. You can tell he's intense, but the moment he gets in front of a camera, it's like
Mr. Personality.
Like, yeah, Mr. Personality, you know what I mean? So I kind of look at him as like Nick Saban. I think that Tim Corbin is sitting on a gold mine, because the way that we understand it, Vanderbilt gets more scholarships than or more scholarship opportunities than most other Division I programs. There's a lot of debate out there. I've yet to learn what the truth is versus what's a lie. Ultimately, it looks like Vanderbilt can use more scholarships on a need-based scenario, since they are a private school and they are the only private school in the SEC. So you guys look into that. It's something interesting. We have a scenario where Vanderbilt might have 15.6 scholarships versus everybody else's 11.7, and that's 33% more. And that goes a long way. So that's six extra players on half scholarship that, you know, teams like Auburn and Alabama, Mississippi State, they don't get.
No, it's four. It's eight extra players, 11 to 15.
Yeah, you're right, eight.
That's eight on half scholarship. I mean, yeah, it's totally an advantage, and I think that is just one small – that's one factor that's playing into this freaking just positive feedback loop, like a snowball rolling down a mountain, just getting bigger and bigger, and Vanderbilt is not going anywhere. Like we talked about before the show, that if you are a top 150 recruit, you know, and you can go look who these kids are for the next 4 years, it's wild, on perfectgame.com or whatever website, Perfect Game, you can see the top 150 players. If you are Texas Eastward, and you're one of those kids, Vanderbilt is in your top five. Like, you get to wake up as the recruiting coordinator to Vanderbilt and take your pick of the litter. And they deserve it, right? I'm not mm-hmm. bashing it. I'm just stating that this is how it is. And there are other schools that are like that too, but kids are getting smarter these days in the sense that you have to actually have a pitch to these kids. Like, how are you – why is it in my best interest to come to your school? For example, I'm not going to name the school, but there's a prominent school, and then I'll turn it over to you. There's a prominent school in the SEC who I heard on a podcast recently who was talking about the recruiting process. This is a very good school too. And the coach said – he's a recruiting coordinator. And he said one of the worst things you can do if you want to play at this school is after you receive an offer from them, is for you to tell them, well, X and X school gave me a better offer. You're going to have to match that or else I wouldn't accept it. Just makes sense. You know, it's freaking, this is, it's pragmatic. You know, you do the best thing for you. And this recruiting coordinator said, no, our offer is our offer. You know, we don't change them, take it or leave it. It's like, dude, you're competing against Vanderbilt. Look, like, you don't just, you're competing for these kids that can be worth millions of dollars if they want to. And then you've got schools like Vanderbilt who are going out of their way to bring in as much technology as possible to develop these kids. And a great, on top of all that, Tim Corbin, a perfect example, is turning the reins over to Kumar Rocker as a true freshman to let him call his own game. That is unprecedented. You know, what I said before the show to Ben is that Tim Corbin is, you mentioned the Nick Saban comparison. I've got one I like too. He's the John Calipari of college baseball. He's letting these kids know that if you come here and you're one of like the elite players in the country, this will get to be your show. I will let you have it on game day. And that's just going to make kids even more excited to go there. Like, ooh, Kumar Rocker gets to call his own game. And wow, like I could be like that. They are not going anywhere anytime soon. And it's going to be a big problem for the rest of the SEC.
Right. And just think about this, James. Think about the recruiting pitch they have now where it's like, hey, you see what the number two overall high school prospect did? You know, he skipped the draft, came to our school, and now he's a living legend. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you think college baseball, you think Kumar Rocker. Hey, don't you want to be that too? I know you're projected to go in the first round for $4 million, but we can make you worth $8 million if you come here for 3 years. Yeah. And the kids are going to be like, yeah, sure, let's do it. Let's get better. Let me call my own game. Let me develop, and boom, double your – that's a 200% – return on just going to school. Amen. So no, I love that point a lot, and it's gonna be weird because I don't know if Vanderbilt ever gets in a position where they're bad again, because they continue to get the best players, they continue to develop those best players, and who's going to compete with them? Like, sure, Vanderbilt isn't going to win the national championship the next 3 years. They might not even win the national championship next year, but they're going to be in a position where they're hosting a regional, probably hosting a super regional, and most likely end up in Omaha. But the bottom line is college baseball is a sport where if you – and we've seen it in the past. This is why I bring it up. If you have success, the success stays. Mm-hmm. You don't see a lot of schools that are successful and then immediately drop off. Think about what Coastal Carolina did. Like, yeah, they were successful. They won a national championship. There's a big drop off from there. But every year now, Coastal Carolina, you know, they make regionals. They make
regionals. Their recruiting classes have improved significantly. You can go and look those ratings right up. So the talent is coming.
It's there. And even if you want to use, so I have a large scale scenario and a small scale scenario where it works. And for example, for the Cal Golden Bears out in the Pac-12, their program almost got like disassembled. I think 2011 mm-hmm. or 2012, and they make a miracle run to Omaha, you know, come within, you know, a couple hits from ending up in the championship game. And now they're producing Golden Spikes Award winners, Team USA members, making regionals, making super regionals. Like, that's one of those things that if you have success, it just makes the recruiting pitch that much easier. Mm-hmm. And also for, like, even if you take Mercer, I know I use Mercer as an example all the time, but Mercer wasn't a program that anybody even knew about until about 8 to 10 years ago. And they started winning games. They became a mid-major team that you could expect to see in regionals. I think they made like 4 regionals in 6 years. Mm-hmm. And now they get one of the better recruiting classes in Georgia every single year as a small mid-major school. So the key, and I think Michigan just hit it on the head with this, the key is to have that one really good class that you develop for 2 years, 3 years, and you use those guys to bring in more recruits that are maybe a little bit higher scale. Yeah. So what you're going to see from Michigan now is like, it was a Cinderella run. You know, nobody thought that they could do anything, but you're going to see them every single year get better and better, and more donors are going to donate money. Their facilities are going to get better. Their recruits are going to get better. And that's what, like, Michigan's pretty much just stapled themselves into a position to be very competitive for the next 5 to 10 years.
Yes, people have officially noticed, and you hit it on the head with how it builds and builds and builds. But the first step is being better at developing players than the guy next to you, because you're not going to get the better recruits unless someone notices you. And so you have to capitalize on this. Like, it's not easy if someone has a 10-foot head start on you to catch them up in a 100-meter race.
That your hands are tied behind your back because you only have 11.7 scholarships. It's an even scholarship amount.
Yeah, good for Michigan of getting this done and for taking these players and putting them on the map, and it's going to allow them to get a little better recruiting class, and if they can make those guys a little bit better, it'll build and build. But I want to finish my thoughts with Vanderbilt, because the college baseball and the landscape of college baseball is definitely dominated by the Southern teams, not just the SEC, but your Florida States, Miami. Like, that's just how it's going to be until the Pac-12 decides to take baseball more seriously from a television standpoint. Like, you know, honestly, during the early parts of the spring, when you don't have like football coverage going on late nights on the weekends and all that, put some Pac-12 games on ESPN2 late at night. Like, you can draw some.
Everybody wants to watch that.
Yeah, but college baseball dominated in the South. And if you are a coach in the SEC or in the South in general, like, the old way of doing things is not going to help you overthrow Vanderbilt. The only way that you're a school, like, because this goes back to what Michigan did, is taking crap, in essence, and turning into something better. And if you have the B players and you don't know how to make them into B+ players, Vanderbilt is going to keep on rolling. So it's the coaches need to get it together, or Vanderbilt is going to keep showing up on the stage. And I think that would be bad for baseball. The last thing college baseball needs is for you to think you know what's going to happen and for it to shake out that way. Like, we don't need college baseball to be about Vanderbilt. We need college baseball to be about the whole sport, because then everyone gets involved and it can grow and grow. Like, how big is Vanderbilt's baseball fan base? I mean, their games, I've seen plenty of their games on the television on Friday nights and all that. Like, the atmosphere has things to be desired. Part of it's because they're in Nashville and it's, you know, there's actually things to do, right? There's actually things to do. But I am letting the college baseball coaches know in the South that it's time to look in the mirror, because no one's going to feel sorry for you. Vanderbilt ain't feeling sorry for you. They're going to continue to get the best players. They're going to continue to push the envelope with their funding and their advanced scholarships that supposedly they have. It ain't going to get any easier. So I hope something gives, because more competition, the better going forward.
Right, right. That's a really good point. I like how you said that. And I think that's a good thing for our fans to look forward to next year, is like, how is the other teams going to adapt? Because you're going to have new recruiting classes coming in. You're going to have new player development systems put in place. And
let me say this. You ain't going to catch up to Vanderbilt by working on more bunt defense and more first and third defense and more 6 a.m. weights. And you're not letting your players get enough sleep and jogging them to death. Have fun. If your favorite, go to your favorite team, your alumni, and watch. If that's how they practice, things won't change. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, okay, that's good. I like that. There's, in my opinion, there's probably 15 teams that have what it takes to overthrow what Vanderbilt's taking up there in Nashville. But
You know what it takes. You know what it takes. It takes the desire to win to be greater than your desire to be right. That's what it takes. Your desire to win cannot get in the way of your desire to be right. Because if you think you know, and this school, like, oh, our offer's our offer, we're not going to change it, fine. Lose a kid to Vanderbilt who would rather throw 30 innings as a sophomore than come to your school.
Yeah.
Because he will. It will happen. Right.
But anyways, congrats to the Vanderbilt Commodores for winning the 2019 National Championship. Something that's really cool, and we can end on this note. The out of the tournament that we just watched, the College World Series, I know the College World Series is the name for the whole tournament, but don't count regionals, don't count super regionals. Out of just the College World Series, we got to see about 12 players that will be playing on the Team USA team this fall. We had Tanner Allen from Mississippi State. We have Alex Benelis from Louisville. We have Tyler Brown from Vanderbilt. We have, I just had the list pulled up. Oh, Reed Detmers from Louisville. Justin Foskey from Mississippi State. We have... Justin Foskey.
Okay.
Michael Kieran from Louisville. We have Austin Martin from Vanderbilt. Casey Martin from Arkansas. Bobby Miller from Louisville. I think there's two more. Casey Optis from Arkansas. Kumar Rocker from Vanderbilt.
Man, that's a fun team.
Jordan Westberg from Mississippi State. And then, not to mention, we have our Bash brothers with Spencer Torkelson and Alika Williams.
Nice. Very nice. Wow, that's a team I'm going to follow closely. That's a lot of fun.
So if you guys live on the I think they play some games on the East Coast. They're a lot of fun. I got to watch Team USA last year, and they played Team Japan in Macon, Georgia. It was fun.
Really?
Yeah.
They played at the Mercer Stadium, huh?
No, they played at Luther Williams Field.
Okay, the Bacon Stadium.
Bacon Stadium. Okay. But nice. College baseball is not over, fellas. We have summer ball between Cape Cod, Coastal Plain League, Northwoods League, amongst other leagues. Yeah. We have Team USA playing, and we're also going to have a lot of just one-on-one interviews with some big names inside the game. So you guys stay with us for the rest of the year. We'll get you prepared for the 2020 season. Amen. James, anything else you want to say before we get off?
I mean, I know it's not our final episode or anything, but it just seems like the chapter of the 2019 season is coming to a close. I just want to thank everyone that has been a part of this, because you've been – as much of a part of it as we have. You know, there is no podcast if no one listens. There is no show if we don't have people who engage with us. There is none of this. There would just be Ben and I talking to each other about it, like we've done for
the
good old days. And now we get to talk about it with a couple thousand of our closest friends. And I want to say thanks for making us better, because I know I personally grew a lot during this. And we're going to continue to interview players, bring you news, and we're only going to get bigger from here thanks to you guys. And we've had plenty of people reach out that want to be a part of it. So don't go anywhere. Don't count us out yet. Like we said on episode one, don't let this get started. Do not let this get started.
It's already started.
Amen.
5,200 followers over. So thank you guys.